are listening to Let's Go JoJo, the weekly JoJo's Bizarre Adventure podcast from Dynamite in the Brain and Secret of the Sailor Madness. So come along and hang with the Let's Go gang. It's Dwayne.
Hello.
It's Niall.
I'm back.
And it's me, Brian. Tonight's episode. Episode 19 of JoJo's Bizarre Adventure, Golden Wind, White Album, or White Ice.
Yeah. I keep forgetting the corrective to the actual fucking name of the episode. dear.
Yes, Enlightening Behind Magic is Dwayne gets all the episode titles, and then I read them, and then I have to correct myself in my head as I'm reading them to what they're actually saying.
That's what was literally written. I mean, like, they didn't fucking change the part B of his power, which I was kind of surprised with.
No, they did not.
Do they think they have it disguised well enough that they don't need to go any further?
Those Beatles, aren't they, Tejas?
Well, there are two of them left, so it's a matter of time.
No, to be honest, I don't think it's ever been the actual Beatles themselves who've sued over, the Beatles songs.
No, I think for ages it was just the Michael Jackson estate, wasn't it?
Yeah, but I'm not even sure they were as bad as whoever had them before.
I don't know who has it now. Yeah.
Whoever was in charge, Apple.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Righty-ho. This week's episode is an all-out battle between... how did he pronounce his name? Giaccio?
Giaccio.
Mr. and Giorno. And we'll say...
Well, basically, it takes place like between where they crash off the road in the last episode and the dock.
Yeah,
like, right
there's
canal. They don't travel very much distance.
Yeah, there's a section which I guess plays a lot better in the comic because it plays really weird in the animation.
Okay.
It's the bit where they're all really close to each other, not interacting, but just commentating.
Oh, man, I fucking love that. Fucking Journal spends most of this episode just sitting on the car going like, oh, watch out, mister. He's coming at you with ice.
I kind of
like fucking do something, buddy.
I kind of like when they're like tumbling into the water, with, like, two guys in front going, whoa, and Giaccio is just in the back, almost kind of sulking. It's like one of his head tilted back, one said, never wanted to go on a short trip anyway.
Yeah, based off his face, right? I thought Giorno had an amazing plan where it's like, okay, he can't use his ice powers in the water because then he'd freeze solid inside the water and then he wouldn't be able to move. And I have this all planned out. But Giorno specifically states, I probably shouldn't have crashed in the canal. And that doesn't stop him at all in any fucking regard. So,
and yeah. I made mistakes.
Yeah.
Why did you crash into the canal then?
Salt water, you see. That's what he thought. It would freeze slower, not realizing how fast this guy freezes things
he
in the first
freezing
place.
Freezing the fucking the vapor coming out of a car engine from like meters behind it.
Yeah, I did not realize this guy is kind of levels of cold that you only find like in the vacuum of space.
Yeah, pretty much. We're not dealing with regular shit here. dear.
They're sinking. Mister's like, yeah, go. The car's not completely frozen yet. Giorno, make some plants. Go on, make some plants.
And Giorno tries to make some vines to grab to the dock. Your man freezes the vines, and he's like, all I could manage was like subarctic grasses, which are all kind of mossy and shit. So I can't grow that to the dock. And Mister's like, this is brilliant.
Yes.
This is exactly what I need. And he starts eating it off the car.
Yeah,
getting all like big handfuls of it, I start eating it, and then
he goes totally rad with it, which is a much better improvement than just going mad. Yeah.
Yeah, and then he tries to freeze it. He's like, oh, great, now it's frozen, because all he's managed to do is make Mr. a snowboard.
Yeah. Like a snowboard made out of frozen grass.
Put a jazz the glass right out of here.
Yeah, I mean, like, he looks less cool when he turns off his ice powers and he's just standing on wet grass in a canal. It's like, okay, that's not as cool. But he looks very cool for a very short time there.
I'll be back in a second. I just realised I've got a fan heater still on. You guys carry on talking.
Yeah. I just forget said. Oh, yeah. If he's control over all ice and cold, then he'd probably turn the ice off as well. If he didn't think he would do that. But, how about that?
Yeah. Like, I think part of the thing is he displays a remarkable control over his power. I think that's what's the real threat here, and the fact that he should be fighting two guys and he's only fighting like one for pretty much the entire thing.
But that's okay, because the grass is flying through the air, but that grass had been made out of something, and it's like, oh, it'll just reverse back, or Jorna will just turn back into car parts, and now and me, Mister, I'm gonna do the fucking City Hunter one hole shot, and I'm gonna fucking just fire the bullet to hit it, this loose bolt, I suppose, straight into the middle of Garcho's helmet, and then just keep hitting him with bullets to kind of drive it into his skull.
Yeah, yeah. Again, very like his fight with I forgot the guy where he's fighting him on top of the van.
The guy
just trying to drive the thing further in, because it's like you can't break through, but you can keep pushing through, and that kind of becomes the theme of the fight as well.
Yeah,
Mister never does like a one hit one fucking kill thing. It's always like, I gotta shoot that one spot over and over and over. That's always his fucking go to thing.
Ultimately, it seems to be in the last ball. I'm gonna be the kind of the punching bag. Soak up all the damage.
Oh my god! Yeah,
someone else finishes off the fight.
He's the fucking tank, all right. Yeah, you gotta give him that.
And it says, oh, okay, I would never kill a character in any other anime, but this is JoJo we're talking about, so that's only going to slow Gyatso down. So while he sinks to the bottom, and before he begins consciousness or his senses, we got to think of a plan to defeat him. And JoJo's saying, everyone, just get out of here, fucking, you're close to the bank, get out of the water and try and find the fucking thing we're after.
It's a win if you get the disc, and Mister's saying it's like, it's only a win if we get the disc, we kill this fucker, and also both of us get out of this. I'm only counting it as a win then.
I'm getting them all, I'm playing for all the bananas. So
he
sinks down into the bomb and tries to get a beating him and come up with a plan. Says, okay, so this guy's covered in ice, but if he's under the water, he has to be able to breathe. So that must then infer that there was some kind of opening on his stand suit that we can probably bounce a bullet into, maybe multiple bullets.
Yeah, it seems about it to go underwater with the guy with ice powers, but it's so he can see where the bubbles are coming out, and it's the back of his helmet. So he's like, right, that's where I can shoot a bullet. Yeah. I'll just trick shot it in the back of that.
Also glad he didn't try and fire the gun underwater, because you can't do that. You can fire one bullet, and it won't go very far.
I guess, but they are being kicked by tiny little men, because obviously Mister is, he's got his crowd of dudes like egging him on and talking to him. Like, I think Mister's my favorite character because he's a fucking dipshit, and dipshits are always my favorite character on JoJo, but he's an entire fucking group to himself of idiots, which is just wonderful.
Well, so they try and enact that plan then. He's like, they both serve at the same time. He's like, gotcha, motherfucker! Pachoo! Boys! Get him inside the water. Get him in the back of the head. But he tilts his head back, he can't get in, and what's he put in the water to distract him?
He shoots two fish.
He shoots fish, and he's like, why the fuck did he shoot two fish? And he looks down at the fish, it's like, gotcha.
Eyes up here, buddy, boom! And it's like, okay, we got him right in the back of the head, he's dead for sure. It's like, no! You guys still don't get it. We're not talking about fucking, I don't know, a vice man, Bobby Drake over here. We're not talking about some kind of fucking Pokemon. I can just freeze fucking everything at a level you can't even comprehend. I'm freezing very air around with.
And there's kind of like a tinging noise, and that's the part B of his power. His, what was the one of Killer Queen?
This is White Album. It's just like,
Killer Queen's second thing, the little tank.
Sheer Heart Attack.
Yes.
Sheer Heart Attack. Yeah, yeah. The one that's like, it's like a, not a B-side, but it's the extra thing onto their thing. And his one is, White Album's.
White Album Gently Weeps.
Gently Weeps. Yeah, which they don't bother trying to, get rid of it. I was like, maybe they think they can get away with that. All right, because it's a sentence rather than a. I don't know. It seems a bit suspect.
I'm still not quite sure how this functions, because I get, like, you know, if you freeze the very air itself, then it's going to be turned solid and the bullet can't pass through it, but you can manipulate out of space and just kind of ricochet a bullet back by Adam.
He gets to freeze the different parts of the air, which he's basically creating. Like, he's not just like freezing random pockets of air, he's freezing air in a specific way that the bullet will bounce back in a specific way. Apparently, he can do trick shots as well, but only when other people shoot at him, is I think how it works.
According to the Wikia, when using Gently Weeps, White Album can decrease the temperature to reach minus 210 degrees Celsius or less.
Right.
At which point the surrounding air itself freezes solid. With this technique, he is able to create floating sheets of invisible frozen air that are able to reflect bullets back to an attacker.
Okay. So it's not so much we're seeing like tiny little shards of ice. It's just those are the parts of the walls we're seeing. Is that it?
Yeah. I think it's like a reflection like, or something. Yeah.
Right.
So you could like, I don't know, fucking Bugs Bunny shoots like a bullet up a drain pipe and it kind of curls all the way around. He's making a kind of pathway for the bullet to kind of ping around and then it comes out the other side. Like a perfectly kind of perfectly frozen set of angles to kind of direct it back at the shooter. Yeah.
I gotta say this, the tinging noise it kind of makes, it's like might be my second favorite JoJo's noise to the ripple, you know? It's just, I quite like it as just a background thing. It was like, oh shit, here it comes.
Damn, Mr. Fucking gets right back at him. He's like, oh fuck, I shouldn't do that. Is it here we get this little flashback to how Bruno got him in?
I'm trying to remember.
I think he gets shot up and then he enacts his other crazy plan. This is at this stage they're fighting on the docks when he has the flashback, isn't it?
Well, the flashback is when Giorno does his indicator to Mister as to what he wants him to do. When he smashes his arm against the ice and sprays blood everywhere.
He like smashes up his newly grown back arm.
Yeah, because it's this point is when they're all doing nothing while Giaccio searches for the disc.
He's looking in the bins and everything. It's it's pretty comedic.
Particularly,
I was like, oh my god, he's just right there. What do we do?
Yeah, it feels like whoever, the animators ended up figuring out the geography of everything.
and it looks a lot sillier. Yeah, sure.
Yeah. But Giorno, he admires Mister's resolve, and resolve is what we need to try and find a pathway out of the darkness and into the light.
Yeah. Let me show you it by mashing my arm into this car. And he does literally show it by bleeding everywhere, so, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm reading the wiki description of this episode. It makes more sense than actually watching it. So I was not figuring out.
Okay.
Yeah, because the frozen air which he's reflecting off, he only can see that once he's sprayed it with blood.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm guessing like the little shards we're seeing are like every point where the bullet has already hit it, like a crack in the invisible sheet.
Maybe, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm. Or they are just nuggets in this version.
Yeah, whatever way it's trying to represent it, sure.
Then he makes like air reserves, so the hole's frozen shut.
Yeah, he just says like I've frozen the hole shut. I just have a bunch of air in my suit. I only needed to get some more because I was underwater and I'd left it open. That kind of thing.
Yeah, as well, you can kind of like just draw the kind of frozen solid frozen air into the neck hole and then like turn it into air on the other side. Because it's just got a sort of like a bivalve sort of thing going on.
Yeah.
And then Mister gets all the bullets he shot back at him. But then as he's going down, you realize that this was the plan all along. Cause now he's sprayed blood all over his helmet and he can't see.
He's got blood all over his faceplate, which is instantly frozen cause it's so fucking cold.
Yes.
And it's like a gotcha now fucker. And he was using a lamppost as like a thing to ricochet off.
The bullets had fashioned a lamppost into a spike.
And even the Sex Pistols hadn't realized. It's like, oh shit, it's a big spike. Oh, I see what he's doing. Even they don't know the plan. I'm not sure Mister knows the plan, or is he just kind of like accidentally lucky, which does seem to be the case. Yeah.
But he's giving him all the bullet, but he's just going to keep shooting him in the face repeatedly and try and drive the spike through his neck hole and finish him off that way.
But I love the kind of thing of like, I had to out loud laugh because I was like, this is both hilarious and badass where he's just like shooting the guy to drive his head further into spike, but everything he shoots is going to get, he's going to get shot with.
Yeah.
It's kind of great. Well,
stopping to reload, you know, it's fun. Just like pull a cylinder out, more bullets fall off the hatch, and then bam, 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 bam.
Oh god, yeah. Everything you're doing right now is causing you another bullet hole.
Yeah,
that's great.
Oh, yeah. The animation for this, all this final sequence is amazing. And
I
can't put my finger on exactly what it reminds me of, because it doesn't remind me of JoJo's necessarily in some of the art style, but,
Yeah.
I know, it's just fun with Bullets of Fire. Again, we're loving these, like, kind of close range, standoffs, you know, before the more, like, kind of this guy is, you know, just one shot and they go, pachow, but now these just guys is fucking, no, like, you know, on 10 paces and then turn and fire. This guy's just fucking, nope, give him all guns, blam, 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 I'll shoot you back, blam, 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 blam.
See, that's the thing about Mistress Power. It should be like, he only has to shoot one bullet from a distance and then we'll hit you and you'll die. But it's always close range fights with him just shooting a lot of bullets.
You gotta include all the little guys.
That's true. Yeah.
There's a whole revolver.
But it doesn't work either, because he's used the blood which blew out the back of his neck hole to freeze that solid to prevent him from getting pushed any further back.
He's using his neck blood as a neck brace, even of course.
Like, a geyser of blood that came out of the back of his head, no, he's definitely going to fall into a permanent coma, even if he survives this.
Oh, he doesn't sound well when he's explaining that's what he's done. It's like, he sounds like he's in a massive amount of pain with the spike partially into his head. Yeah.
I also think if you go back and watch it again, there's probably some point during it where you could pinpoint where his glasses break, because he starts the episode wearing his glasses and they're not on his face anymore part of the way through. And then the final bullet rebounds back into Mister's forehead, seemingly killing him. But oh no, the wound immediately heals. He's in the arms of Giorno.
In a Christ-like fucking La Pieta kind of fucking thing.
The sun
rises
behind him.
Oh, it's good stuff.
So that's right, Mister, you proved your resolve. You showed, like, you're a real fucking tough dude by taking all the bullets straight to the fucking face. Now,
I was just thinking, like, Giorno, you should have came here earlier and done anything. But okay.
But the sun to rise, I guess the ice would melt? I don't know.
Or
just being dramatic.
Possibly. He was just waiting for his arm to grow back or something. I don't know.
Maybe he can't swim, but he was slowly paddling.
Making
the
fish
the top
out
of
the
car
so
across.
He could bring himself over. Yeah, sure. Okay.
Anyway, then he mudders him onto the spike.
Mm.
That was pretty nasty. Yeah.
Yeah. Not a good way to go.
And then we get the return of something we've not seen since Stardust Crusaders. Homosexual innuendo.
What are you talking about? There's no homosexuality in this show about pretty boys.
I know, but this was straight. This was a straight.
Oh no, this was the one when one character has mistaken two of our main characters to be having sex.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm. And he didn't say anything about it. He was just like, oh, I didn't see nothing.
No. I'll just carry on, let them finish, and I'll come back.
You gotta give him that. Like, yeah, it's just like, okay, all right, if that's how they want to do it, okay.
Yes, because what it turns out is this. He's had, 18 bullet wounds or something, Giorno explains.
Yeah, I don't know how much fucking things he unloaded into himself.
Yes.
And Giorno says, my power isn't technically healing, so you're going to feel every single one of these things I'm going to heal.
Yep.
It's going to be incredibly painful.
I'm just going to turn the bullet that's embedded into you into the bit of you that's got shot out of you. So it might sting.
And also, I may have to take your clothes off for some of them. That was the other bit.
Yeah, because he can't get at him. The dude's been shot up, like, everywhere.
Yes. And so, yeah, as Narancia is passing by on a gondola with a tortoise, he hears Giorno commenting that he's going to have to take his clothes off, and meanwhile he's screaming
and
squirming.
It's like, hey, it's in deep, put it in me, you know, like whatever fucking things he's hearing that is slightly... When you hear it, it's like, oh, shit.
It's very immature.
They just appear to be fucking on a park bench but or something, and your mind's just like, okay.
Yeah, it's very immature, but it is well executed for this sort of...
Yeah.
I mean, it was funnier with Avdol and Joseph because of who they were.
Because when you got the guy who's the complete goon, you got the guy who's been the straight man up to this point, it's kind of like, yeah, that's a good pairing to do.
And also they're magnetically stuck together. So
yes.
Also the crowd. I think the fact that a crowd gathered in that one made it funnier, you know?
Always remember that one kid in front of him just picking his nose. And watching him.
And then got all his friends kind of thing, yeah.
But before all this, Mr. is like, thinks that it feels like Giorno's even more of the capo than Bruno is.
Yeah, he's got such a respect for him and everything. And even with his flashback, you can see, obviously, he respects Bruno a lot. So it's high praise, yeah.
Yeah, but Bruno does as well, because he's the man. Mister, you're a pretty good guy. Anyone who look like Cage would sell their self-defense. That's two things. You're a good shot with a gun, and also you've got like a good kind of lust for life. You got a lot of like vitality. You're kind of guy I want from my gang.
So he basically cooked the books to get Mister out of jail for killing all those people.
Yeah, it's advance.
I mean, the guys literally came at him, so I think that's fair enough. Like, yeah, I'm with Mister there, but I like the idea of him going as like, you got a lust for life. That's why you wouldn't have lasted as long as your sentence is in jail.
Yeah. And I like the fact that he's still in civilian clothes at that point, and then the rest of the gang show up in the clothes we see them in every day.
Their uniforms.
Fugo like paid for that with money, with gangster money.
You bought most of a suit. Yeah.
And providing you didn't stop it during the end credits, you got a scene afterwards where the boss learns that whoever was keeping track of Risotto has lost him. Yeah. And figures he must be.
Is he checking in on those hackers that all got killed?
Looks like it, yeah. Mm. Yeah. Then he disappears.
And he's like, well, maybe Bucciarati's team will finish all of the hit squad off, but it doesn't matter if they don't.
And it's especially ominous considering the next episode title.
The boss's last orders.
Yep. That's a nice little... That's a very fun vibe. I remember this like being particularly brutal in the comics. And when I knew it was going to be a bit squeamish about guys having their like. I did a little bit for Mister like his Pam down the ice, and then Pam on hood of the car.
That was
and
nasty,
then it's like
yeah.
Then the car freezes and they pulls it away, but takes away like the top layer of skin off it. It's like, oh, that's gross.
Yeah, he pulls away like the, and there's just like the whole, I thought his whole hand was ripped off, but then he kind of has his bloody hand print kind of thing where hand with no fucking skin on it. And I was just like, oh, that's nasty. Yeah, yeah. There's a lot of super, just him getting fucked up in this episode. But really solid episode.
Yeah, it didn't come across as much either in the comic, but how crazy Giacho was, and it was a good turn there to get Nobuhiko Okamoto to voice him, aka Bakugo.
So we got Bakugo and Midoriya in this. It's like, I guess it was like, who can we get who's like an angry, crazy bastard? It's like, I got a guy.
One of the best in the business.
Dear. Yeah, fucking excellent character. I can see why he's a lot of people's favorites. I was kind of hoping for more of his trouble with wordplay. But it didn't have time with all the action happening, I guess.
Yeah, I can stand as well as it's the way it's manifested as unusual, this sort of this speed skater costume.
Yeah, and the fact that it's kind of like a suit of armor rather than a separate guy to you. Yeah.
Yep. And again, a little bit of a retread of an earlier ability that already came up as a stand power, but it made it in a different and kind of more powerful way. But it's also kind of cool. I like seeing how he kind of goes over things, but doesn't just go back and just kind of change things that happened in the past. It's fun to say, no, let's kind of revive that idea and see what way I can kind of, what are ways I can take it.
Yeah.
Good. As we say, next week's episode is The Boss's Last Orders. But now moving on, it's the show within a show. It's all the other anime we watched during the week in Let's Go. And we start off with Dororo, Episode 6, The Story of the Mariko Song, Part 2. The entire end part of this is very much straight out of the comic. Down to the leader of the...
Like a one-for-one kind
of
thing?
The leader of the goons. Not one-for-one, but the leader of the goons. His character design is straight out of the comic.
Oh, okay. I thought you meant, like, just the sheer brutality of it and everything.
Oh, it's pretty brutal, that as well.
Okay, fair enough.
But you've got more of a reason to care about the people being brutalized in this version of the story.
Yeah, it definitely makes you sympathetic to wanting these guys to get fucked up, yeah.
Yeah. In this week's episode, the nice people get killed because that's how this story works.
Everything you could expect, everything would happen, happened.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely not trying to trick you into like, oh, maybe they'll live happily forever after. It's kind of setting up as like, yeah, they've got a plan and they're going to live happily ever after. And I was like, nah, not, this isn't that kind of story, but I can see that this is going to go so badly.
Yeah.
But it tells it so well.
It's a steady like escalation is there as well.
And the dread of waiting for the fucking hat to drop kind of thing, yeah.
Like, Hiaki Maru's these guys is fucking... It's good leg bitten off, and he's kind of... Fucking...
Was that the first leg that grew back, or the one he got back recently?
That's the one he got back.
It's the one he grew skin on recently.
Okay.
Yeah, because he had painted on it, yeah.
Yeah.
That's
it.
Oh, sorry, I thought he grew... like both his feet back, and the reason his foot got chomped off is because he didn't think to protect his new foot because he wasn't used to having it. I might have had that wrong, though.
I don't know. He is this game kind of cares because he's other senses to deal with, and he's getting other inputs, he doesn't know what to do with them.
Right. Like every sense he gets back seems to maybe not necessarily weaken him, but certainly compromise him. Yeah.
It's confusing to him. It's a new sensation. He doesn't know how to kind of implement it into his usual fighting style, I suppose. So he's going. So he's going through the wars. Similarly, a guy knows that fucking Mio, she's coming back after fucking doing double shifts at fucking both camps, and you know, she's bruised, she's kind of roughed up. It's not a pretty sight to see her go through all that. Dororo, as you know. She knows that Von Dora witnesses, and she's kind of surprised that he would know the kind of things that
I thought it was an interesting turn where initially he seems like mad at her for it, but then he's talking to one of the kids and it instantly dawns on him. It's like, she's doing this for everyone else's benefit.
Yeah.
And he has to say that much to her where it's like, you're doing a good thing here.
Yeah.
You're not a bad person for this, that kind of thing.
Remind me of my own mother, who also went to similar kind of lengths, but that was what you do is the one thing she would never do, or never did.
Yeah, but you're still as brave a person as her, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
That was a really nice bit for him. Trying to, as like a kid trying to fucking get through this really messed up adult shit, yeah.
The Biwa monkey thinks, I'll take like the long road around, trying to avoid that antlion monster who's going to fuck me up. Keep an eye on Hiakimaru, because he's kind of like a child with a toy. If you take it away from him, he's just going to try and get mad and try and take it back, which is probably what he's going to do regarding this.
Yeah. Like, he gives Doro a lot of advice. Like, I think he won't even repeat his thing where... repeats it from hearing it from Dororo, from the monk, where it's like, he's like a beast in a cave.
Yeah.
And like, his extra addition to that is like, you better make sure it's not a monster that comes out, kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's always the fear. Because a thing we hadn't seen previously is that as the monk's kind of departing and Mio is speaking to Hiakimaru try and calm him. Or as you can see, the monk can see, like, it is the same spirit sense that Peggy Mara has, and there's some other element intermeshed with Yakimaro's being. It's like the residual taint of the demons in there, and
like he's still got some demon on him, what with all the curses.
And again, maybe what's saying to him is calming that down somewhat, or maybe he's being stirred up because of his attachment, probably.
Because it does a flashback to him seeing him go off as a kid. There's still, like, it's a steady enough piece of red flame kind of thing coming off him when he's a baby going away in the boat. But in this one, like, there's just, like, tiny little shards of red. So I assume it's supposed to be, like, it's lessening it. This is making him less demon-like. Because I'm guessing he was pretty red by the end of it.
Yes. What you expect to happens. One side of this whatever skirmish or conflict wins out. The other end is think, oh, we've seen this girl going around in her camp. She's obviously a spy. We're going to come in there and slaughter her and all these kids.
Yeah, I thought that was excellently cut against Hiakimaru's fight with the, or second fight with the antlion, where he kind of like does the thing of he made himself a peg leg, but he used one of the swords the kids had gathered from the battlefield to put a trick on him. Yeah.
You were saying, Brian, recently there that's sort of creeping more and more into media these days, having the prosthetic limb be weaponized, usually a leg and usually as a blade of some sort.
Yes. Still doesn't beat who's got the rocket launcher knee in Full Metal Alchemist.
Oh, I thought you were going to say in Cyborg 00.
No.
shit.
One of those dudes in the, like, the, that northern place where we're called Snowy and we're fucking Armstrong's sister was on the show.
But even rocket knees aren't that fucking uncommon.
I remember there was a guy there where, you know, his whole thing was, I got like a fun the prosthetic arms, but I got like a whole bunch of them. I got like fun guns and big hammers and shit in them.
Like different replacement parts. Yeah.
It's like you know, is that
like fucking Death's Head? He had that, didn't he?
Yes, he did. Yeah. Yes. I think it does quite the interesting thing, which isn't what the story is about, but it's like a subtext in there, is the idea that as Hayakimaru gets more able-bodied, so to speak, he actually gets weaker.
Yeah, he was at his most invulnerable when he didn't have all this connection to humanity, as it were.
But when he gets a sword for a leg, he seems to be much more capable of defeating the Atlion by himself as well.
When he had two legs, But where they cut the slice of the Antlion's head in the back, and like it cuts to the camp, and you see like a kid with a slash on his back collapse. Mm. I was just like, oh, it's really well cut between those two scenes, because it's like it's the violence that it's like, yeah, get that monster, and it's like, oh Jesus, everyone who was nice is dead.
It's quite graphic as well. It doesn't shy away.
Way more than you want to see.
the other thing this episode has a lot of is Hayakimaru's little brother.
That's right, yeah. Kind of the contrast between them, where he desires glory in battle, the kind of thing Yakubar is currently fucking doing and experiencing the results of an army doing its fucking thing, yeah.
And the mother's guilt about Yakubaru. And
it's nice that it's not presented that she doesn't love her second son, it's that the guilt of her first son is like really weighing heavy on her, as it fucking would. Yeah.
And it feels like both parents know that the deal only got them this far, and they don't.
Yeah, yeah. It's the line of the mothers, we sit on a small keystone kind of thing.
Yeah.
Mm. I did like the thing of it's like, oh, there's been no rain, the rice paddies are dry. It's like, oh, look, the clouds are coming in. And again, it's cut as Yakimaru kills the thing and the fucking the clouds clear.
Yeah, that one guy who rushes out to get his.
With a bucket, yeah.
Motherfucker!
Fuck you guys, honestly. I mean, like, obviously the people don't know what they have caused, what their good fortune lies on the back of, but I'm kind of like, yeah, you kind of don't deserve it if it's going to be on just this person's suffering.
Yeah, I wonder a bit as well if Hayakimaru's, like, slow progression of demon killings is, like, weakening the power of the pact, is, you know, as more of those statues get split open, you know, that their prosperity being away.
It's suggesting that because obviously they're suddenly in conflict with their neighbors who they've been on very good terms with up to now, that kind of thing. The weather isn't doing as well.
Yeah.
Too much rain or too little rain, that kind of thing.
Yeah. I can see the cabin now as like Hayakimaru, you know, he fights his way through, you know, and gains his power, gains his fucking like body back. He'll come upon and maybe find his family again, but
by the time he gets there, it's probably going to be a fucking wasteland. Yeah.
Oh, and as desperation sets in, you know, his dad will probably resort to even more desperate and probably more crueler means, and you know, he could be like reunited with his mother in the most tragic way possible, because he's going to arrive and find her in. I don't know. I don't want to even imagine.
Well, I mean, if it sticks to the comic, no, it's tragic in a different way. It's. So I won't say what it is, but
okay, fair enough.
It's tragic it is tragic, I think, in a better way than just a bleak death type sort of situation. I did like the two attendants / friends of the younger brother as well. I thought they were
there from when he was a kid as well.
Yeah,
so
and it's like they're
like his oldest friends / servants.
Yeah, and they're allowed to criticize him.
Well, I mean, like, they're basically complimenting their lady, so they're allowed to criticize the son.
Yes. I like the fact that he...
Because they're there to raise him as well, I guess.
Yeah, yeah, and I like the fact he recognized that he was... He was not misbehaving, but he was out of sorts talking to his mother.
Yeah, I think he said as much. I know I was behaving childish, but fucking, I'm just fucking, I'm just so mad all the time.
Yeah, it's hormones. Yeah, which is good because it isn't so that he fucking takes after his dad and being an absolute shit. And yeah, I think when
that he has
when,
some of his mother's kindness. Yeah,
yeah. And yeah, when I think the brothers never be had to fucking come into conflict with each other, there's not just going to be a much more interesting dichotomy between the two.
Yeah. I feel like if any of the family are doomed to die a terrible death, it's that kid.
Yeah.
yeah, probably. Because he's not in the know as everyone else as well, making it just more tragic. Like, he didn't fucking sign up for this the dad did or anything. And he's not aware of what the fuck is going on. But he's like, it affects his life anyway. Yeah.
Yeah, because it's like the two parents are obviously protecting him. Because it's like, he's the replacement son for the one they did a deal with demons with.
Mm.
Anyway, it's a good series. Absolutely cracking series. I believe there's an Osamu Kobayashi episode later on in the series.
Because
I saw him on his Twitter feed, I think recording like episode like somewhere in the teens, so... That's the other good sign, is they're well ahead on production as well.
Yeah.
Righty-ho. Next on the list is Mob Psycho 100, 2, Episode 6, Poor, Lonely, Whitey. Now, Dwayne, let Regan have it both barrels.
What a fuck, man. Okay, but like when you started and it's that's like nice and what's the internet fucking term? Wholesome fucking thing with Mob and all his friends just having a good time and Regan's just being a dick. Ah, you're really going to turn me against you. Like it did a good job of maybe going like, fuck this guy, man.
But yeah, but then he has those same thoughts about himself.
Yeah, but he tries to like, again, like push it off him as like, oh, Mob's going to be lonely. We'll get into the specifics, I think, is the best way to go over it.
the telepathy club and the body.
You mean the body improvement club?
Improvement club both discover that they have members who've just had a birthday.
And so, it's one guy's birthday that day, and there was one guy's birthday last week as they're celebrating Mob hitting 35 push-ups or something like that. They're all so genuinely, like, impressed at what progress he has made. And it's so nice. It's great.
Yeah. But because it's a couple of people's birthday, they're going to go out and celebrate. So they're going to have a slap-up
meal. We'll
go
to a family restaurant. I'm not even going to go to, like, fucking get some greasy food or something.
I think they just get burgers and chips,
it's probably pretty
they?
Greasy.
No, but your man, like, the Body Improvement Club is like, okay, guys, we got drinks. They got, like, infinite refills, basically. And they're just really excited about this. They're just... Everything they're doing is so nice. It's like, you're not even just going to get some nasty fucking greasy chicken or something? All right.
Yeah.
Our cheat day. Stay strong, boys.
Looked like infinite limeade was what they were getting.
Yeah.
And then they go to karaoke. Well, they're going to go to karaoke, but unfortunately, then that's when Regan decides that he really needs Mob over here to help him out with an exorcism.
Like, as soon as Mob is literally going like, oh, this is nice, I don't get to do this that often, and he gets a fucking call.
However,
the universe is against you, man.
Unlike those other times, though, he says, Master, do you... You know, I've got my own life, right? I know, I've got things to do. Ow, come on, get over here. I need you.
It was nice even the table reacting to that Mob is actually, like, very quietly, very politely standing up for himself. The table kind of turned to Mob. Is like, you okay, bud?
I've asked you not to call me out of the blue like this so many times. This could upend my entire day. I know you think I'm just going to school, just doing stupid things, but I have a life.
And it's a ghost who died slipping and cracking his head open on a block of tofu, was it?
Frozen tofu.
Something like that.
Frozen tofu. Yeah. Well, I mean, like, you wouldn't crack your head on regular tofu, would you?
Yeah. We get some them all the way across down. This ghost is exercised in like 2 seconds, and then they're out of there. And it's like, and Mob is like, "Master, like what you did there, you know, wasn't very appropriate, wasn't very nice." And you got like respect my schedule. Like I got school to go to, and I got club, and I got friends and things. Everyone said, "Ah, whatever."
I got a social life, that kind of thing.
Stupid
like,
stuff. You got a bus ghost of me, and be cool. Might be cool, don't you?
They're not your real friends, man. They're just using you, not like me. And it's like, oh, you motherfucker. How dare you? But Mob doesn't take it for once. And it's I'm feeling good about how the show is like showing growth of Mob. And in this case, now Regan, he's got some growing to do.
It's safe. It blows him up. He gives him the cold shoulder. And I'm just going to get home early from school. I'm going to, play video games with my bro, which I haven't done in ages. It's great. It's so much fun right here. And Regan doesn't know what to do with himself.
Yes.
Oh, man.
Wait, first of all, he's fantasizing that Bob's going to come back any minute now.
Yeah, oh, Bob will be back here. And I'll be like, oh, don't worry, my disciple, and that kind of thing. And it's he's probably very lonely right now. You know, cut to Mob having a good fucking time.
No. But it's like, no, he's not coming back. So he's solaced by, I got throw myself into my work. God, I'm just kind of try and work the pain away. Fill that void with something, anything at all.
Didn't he avoid Mob like an ex when he sees him in town?
Yes. Oh, yeah, that's later on when...
Oh, that's later on, sorry.
Yes, because
okay.
The thing which sets him completely off is when he gets a letter from his mum.
Oh, that scene is so good.
Telling him he should get a proper job.
Yeah, and also when so-and-so his mother up the road, there is a she passed away. The funeral is on there on Sunday. It's like Carol Easton or something like that now. It's the least they could do for them. They're neighbours, you know. Mammy's going on about what the local news you don't have any reference point for anymore.
The scene is set up so well because he goes to the usual pub he goes to that's full of like suckers, the sucker pub, I guess. Where he generally feels good about himself, but he says, hey guys, it's my birthday. And one of them tries to sell him on this fucking pillow scheme. I don't fucking know what she's trying to sell him.
Oh, yeah. No, like, so, yeah.
Memory foam or something.
Yeah, it's so many things. Yeah, so no, the great drawer, you're right, is first that he's in town, hides behind the sign, Dimple sees him there.
And he has a conversation, like he tries to get Dimple on his side to get Mob back. Dimple's kind of like, oh, whatever, bro.
Well, I guess
like, he nearly has Dimple.
Probably the last time we're ever going to see you.
I was so on Dimple's side for once. It's great. Yeah,
then he goes,
I know he's up to shit. I know he's specifically up to shit, but in this case I'm on his side.
So basically then they invite him back to karaoke, and then it contrasts with Regan's night where he forgets it's his birthday.
Yes.
Goes on Facebook, goes, oh, excellent, a message, and it's just the link to say how many friends have wished you a happy birthday and it's zero. Then he gets the email from his mum. Then he goes to the pub where it's all people who fall for pyramid schemes and con men, and they treat him like a
mark.
They come seeking help from him, but as soon as he says it's his birthday, it's one of them tries to fucking sell their shit to him. That they've been sold on, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So it's just more awkward for him. And he had a, what was it, a fucking lemon sour?
It
was his first drink at age 28, which turned out to not have any alcohol in the first place.
Yeah, it was like fucking Double Decker the last week, which are one getting drunk on not alcohol.
Yeah.
I love that joke.
The placebo effect, though, is very powerful. You feel all kind of the... All the kind of lowering of inhibitions of being totally wasted, but less of the side effects.
Yeah, I think even the fact that he was having trouble trying to retch of the non-alcohol that he drank was kind of like, dude, you're not fucking drunk. Go home. Go home, you're not drunk. Yeah.
I saw someone get drunk on TV once. This is what you do, right?
I'm at my lowest point now. This is it. I've had one non-alcoholic drink.
You gave up our life, didn't you? You're drunk. We're gonna real job, busting ghosts.
Well, yeah. So next morning, he turns his life around by becoming a YouTuber and advising people how to avoid being conned.
That's a real career. Okay, great, great job, Rick.
It works. He becomes famous.
I mean, it does get him. It's not his psycho percentage. It's his popularity percentage.
Yeah. The thing which makes him famous though is because he defeats the ghost who's haunting an MMORPG.
Oh, that was a big job. Not even Mob could have defeated this guy. And yeah, it just does the thing, like a very quick thing of him fucking himself over by playing like a Morpher for far too long.
Yeah. You put like 7 or 8 different
accounts,
characters going at the same time. Just...
And he spent all, like he's in the red because he spent it all on elite gear kind of shit. Yeah. And it's like, oh, I beat him, but at what cost to my body? And on the photo of like happy customers, like he just looks like shit on that photo. It's good stuff. Like there's a lot of good bits there, yeah.
And he's invited on TV, which of course appeals to his vanity, not knowing that it's actually a trap. It's a James Randi style trap to expose a fake psychic.
But by a real psychic.
Yes, but by a real psychic. That's the where it separates from James Randi and Uri Geller. But
yeah. I want like knee me in the chest in the or episode, will you? But I'll show you. I'll show you all.
I guess it was like the fact that he made him look like an asshole in front of all his disciples because he didn't even remember. It's like my disciples told me you need the ghost out of me.
Yeah.
So fuck that noise. Yeah.
And that's where the cliffhanger is. Next week he's going to get his revenge on Reagan and humiliate him live on TV.
Good.
Or will he? Or are we not? He's by fucking bumbling his way out this and landing his feet like he always does.
Now, this is a really fun episode. I think my favorite bit was that entire bit of, and it's so simple, of just Reagan in front of his computer all alone in his tiny apartment and shots of like the fans on the computer and shit. And just like, you know, this is the lowest point right here.
Yep.
It's like, here's your present, son. And is it a job at the recruitment agency, or is it go to this recruitment agency?
I think it's go to this recruitment agency.
I wasn't sure if the recruitment agency were hiring is what the other thing was. It's like, but yeah, it's not good.
Go to bed, Reagan. Nothing good happens after midnight. Well, more like after 3 a.m., but
yeah.
Yes, you get what I mean.
Because then you get the idea that it's, as much as he was helping Bob, he was also doing it because he was lonely. As well, even though he didn't realize that himself until he no longer had Mob in his life.
Mm. It opens with a shot of him working in an office and him renting the space but not knowing what business to do.
Yeah. I'm wondering, did he quit his job or was he fired? That's kind of an open question. Like, did he leave because he didn't like what he was doing? It's kind of hard to tell what the impetus was for him to go out and do that.
Yeah, I feel like the thing of him, like, he's a nice guy who has helped Mob out a lot and given him some really good solid advice, but is also a fucking shuckster and a fraudster, but has technically helped out a bunch of people as well, mostly with not ghosts.
He helped save the world.
Yes.
But giving everyone a telling off because they thought he had psychic power.
Yeah, but that's what he needed to hear.
Yeah, like, but I mean, like, it's the kind of thing of he needs to do self-improvement to be a better person. He is actually making the world better in his own weird way, but not because he's trying to. Kind of nearly by accident he's making the world better.
I think a big part of the story overall is, like, people searching for something which will give them meaning, be it Dimple's cult.
Yeah, and this is definitely the Reagan story.
The Psycho Helmet or Scar. It's like all these... I assume we'll get more of it once we see the rest of Scar and the leader. We'll have a better idea of like why these people... joined up in the first place.
When you put it in those terms, besides urban legends, it's also like a little good mirror for Boogie Pop.
Yes. Just a lot less static than Boogie Pop. Though Boogie Pop wasn't as static this week. No,
very different this week. My other favorite shot in this was, what's the chubby psychic guy's name? I keep forgetting his name.
Shinra?
I'm loving that guy. Him doing the interview.
Yes.
Where he keeps looking at the camera. Yeah. That's such a simple animation fucking joke, but it was so funny. Really good.
Yeah, presumably like the lights kept on changing on which camera was pointing at him and his eyes were just falling.
He wasn't sure.
Just look at me.
But it was just his eyes. He wasn't moving his head.
Yeah. Just the mouth flapping and the eyes like, I don't know what to do. The desperation there. It was wonderful.
Righty ho, next up is Rinchi Okoda-chan, episode 6. Who was on it this week?
Yosuke Takahashi.
That's the boy.
And the lady was...
Suzuko Mimori?
Oh, yes. Yes. And it was rotoscoped, wasn't it? I didn't watch the interview, so.
I partly watched the interview, but I did the thing where I watched it way too late at night, and I was like, I can't watch this right now.
I watched it at work and a brief tea break, and I couldn't finish the whole interview. But I got some of the strokes, what they were trying to do here. It's obviously rotoscope, and they mentioned there was the performer who was moving, they were copying there. So.
It'd be funny if they got her in as well to get the full Akota Chan is also still here.
He doesn't do her own stunts.
Yeah. I have fried things shirtless. It's a bad idea. Don't do it.
Yes.
I found this very relatable because, God, I do this whenever the weather is hot, which is every summer now.
It's not fucking worth it, man. I got to try that bag trick. That's pretty good.
Well, I would just say, Didi, if it was going that much, I'm just going to put like a shirt on myself. But I do know the possibly unique, maybe quite ubiquitous and kind of common pain of frying and cooking things with topless.
that's bad, man.
Let that middle of it sink in there, listeners.
Oh dear.
I don't. Trying to be saying, oh, you're a freak now. No one does that. Well, at least one other person does. She's fictional. But you can't.
Well, yeah. I wonder how fictional she is, really, to be honest.
I mean, she's fucking found two people who do it on this fucking podcast being a fictional character. So that's like a pretty good sign that a bunch of people do it.
Yeah. And that's what I get into in the interview. It's you were just like, she's very much so. Yeah, maybe a lot of fellas my age, I was. For a while, I just kind of thought of women when they're at home, probably all elegant and
oh, it's like how people view like pillow parties. It's all like tea. It's like, no, it's just girls like farting and being horrible.
No, it's like they got a hard day at work and want to get out of these sweaty clothes and just crack open a beer and put a fry on like everybody else. This isn't some kind of grand mystery. We're all human beings. We're all get kind of lazy and fucking sloppy.
That's kind of what the main thing of the show is. It's her like letting it all hang out at home, but then talking about the difference between that and the layers, and she defines them by color and that kind of thing that she has to wear, and her being called out by friends and then again putting on her face, that kind of thing.
And
comparing herself to a middle-aged dude while she's at home, but when she goes out she's a Akota Chan. And even does it even flowers blush at me when I walk past, something like that.
Yeah
I guess, do they know the secret truth of just, she's just a slob?
That's just a little note in there. As far as I got an interview, so they have the horoscope, performer there, animation and that. And we have the first person comes in, she's kind of coming in, she's with the full business suit on, she's just and then off camera, this year just kind of like, get rid of this fucking heavy suit jacket, get a shirt off there, undergarments coming right off there, and then Takashi says, what I was doing the first time after this was, because this is something I do at home, I get into the baths, I wear boxers, I do this kind of thing for fun, I get them down and get them off on 1 foot, and then I kind of kick the boxers off the end of my foot into the laundry basket, and then the women in the studio said, no woman ever do that, so we're not putting that in the cartoon.
Well, you say, that's learning some life truths as well.
It was very interesting to learn as well. I too do an episode, and also true comments like that. Some of the actual truths about how women live, not different from any other person. So, but there are some things they still won't do, obviously.
I did see the first 5 minutes of the interview, I now realise, because that's where the timer was left when I went to the Crunchyroll. And yeah, he was basically, the bit at the start, he was basically saying it was great, because normally I have to do everything the production committee wants me to do, but this time I could do everything I wanted to do.
Yeah.
Every interviewee, or at least the director, seemed to be A, confused as to why they were asked, and B, it's like, I can do whatever the fuck I want. Cool.
I don't know. But trash kind of game for a laugh. Most people know him as the Votoms guy. But he casts his net around a fair few different series and genres.
Good chunk of shoujo stuff in the early 90s that he was involved with.
Yeah, and you know, a gavel story there because it's about kind of personal freedom. It's only in your own home where you just kind of walk around naked and do your own thing, but it's still that freedom that's very personal and very important to oneself.
Right. Oh, what do you think of episode 5 as well, Niall, because you weren't here last week?
Episode 5, I was the one with all this kind of the macro drawings. There's somebody doing the sound effects. That was actually a class, echoing your own thoughts. Like, yeah, it's cool. And as against set up against like Mob Psycho that week, it was some good cartoons happening there.
Yeah. I like the rotoscoping in this one. I think they find the balance in
like the stylization
of the face, particularly, because that's always the problem. It's like you either go too far, like the Flowers of Evil thing, where they stop looking like cartoon characters. And look like bad drawings of human beings. Or what's the Nobunaga one where it makes them all look like they're wearing masks? The time traveling prince of the pauper one.
You're getting me confused. Nobunaga Concerto.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's a CG thing, isn't it?
Yeah, but that's rotoscoped as well.
Yeah, it's a hard thing to get, but I think they were going for like a realism in this, so rotoscoping is obviously the way to kind of express that to one extent. Yeah,
I like the way they her face looks very much like an old Japanese print of a portrait of a lady. Very evocative of that.
Yeah, it's not really like they were going for like she has an old fashioned. A classical look of beauty, that kind of thing. But obviously just walking around her house naked like a slob.
Yeah, and it's the human proportioned head, but it still looks like a cartoon.
Yeah, yeah.
Representation of a human being. Righty-ho, next up on the list is Karakuri Circus, episode 17, Visitors. Oh, right, Karakuri Circus, they're still in flashbacks, but meanwhile, Guy has showed up.
It's like, hey guys, sorry I'm late, and your man's like, actually, you're here early, you just interrupted the flashback.
Yeah, he is literally here early, because he shows up slightly later in the comic.
Guy was the guy
French guy who goes, looks at one of those, like, picture brooches, and goes, maman. Who was left behind when the plane crashed.
Yeah, so he's been in the circus tent all this time.
Yes, well it turns out that Shoji had promised him 3 years ago that should Masaru have Sadayoshi's brainwaves imprinted on his brain, then Gi was going to be allowed to kill him.
I promise I'll come and kill him if that eventuality happens. I was waiting outside the mansion, I was waiting to see if he'd fight those ninja guys. He did. So it's probably Sadayoshi, so I'm here to kill him.
Yeah. If this incredibly bizarre turn of events actually transpires somehow, then please take this course of action.
No problem. And then, like, he doesn't do that.
Yeah, that,
I mean, he shows up late/early. That's about
That happens after we get a truncated version of the introduction of the flashback where we meet Dean Maestra. Who is Sadayoshi before he was adopted?
So, this guy is from Holland or something?
He's Shirigane. He's voiced by Toshio Furukawa.
Listen, I know how it works, but what I'm saying is the character is like Dutch, I think, isn't it?
Something like that, yes.
Yeah. I suppose actually that period in Japan, it would be like Holland or Japan.
For some reason, they skip over in the comic after he gets introduced. We get an explanation of why he adopted him, how they get away with nobody going, hang on, this Saiga family appear to be incredibly long-lived.
Like, as far as I can tell, they seem to move around a bunch. Yes. Like, just from watching this episode, because it's like, oh, we were at the old family homestead. And I was like, this is a different place than you were the last scene.
Actually, I think it's supposed to be something like that. I think he's American. Dean Maestro.
Oh, is he? Okay.
Yeah. I think from that's what the wiki said, I think.
Nobody seems to recognize, like, race or ethnicity in this fucking world.
Well,
so that's
that is
fine.
Also explained.
Of course it is.
But all these explanations, and then the final sentence he says in the flashback, are a massive giveaway to what you've probably already figured out by the fact that he's voiced by Toshio Furukawa again.
Like, I'm wondering, like, is it, like, very simple as to what the big secret is?
Well, I'm going to say it, because at this point I can't trust that they'll ever say it, based on previous.
No, no, that's fair enough, based off how it's adapted. Yeah, go for it.
So, what they do is, at this point in the comic, they'd explain that Shirigani age, it takes them 5 years to age 1 year.
Right. Oh, okay, that's the conversion, all right.
Yeah.
I knew it was slower, but I didn't know how much.
So what they're going to do is pretend that Shoji died at sea, and the company will be inherited by Sadayoshi, his adopted son. Meanwhile, and as you see for the bulk of this episode, Angelina will hide out at the Kuroga village, and also Shoji will, until, I can't remember how old it is, basically until Sadayoshi's aged a certain amount of age.
Until he's gone a reasonable amount of years that they need to switch.
And then they'll switch back, yes. And then he'll...
It's like, this is my son.
Yes,
that's
the plan.
This is my son, Dad.
And the reason this can take place so easily is not just because of the aging and the swapping, is because Dean Maestra has a very flexible face and he can just move it around to make it look like other people. Who have we met in this cartoon who has... the same voice as him, and can do that. And then to top it all off, eventually when he leaves them, he explains that I've got to go now because they want me to head a new division of Shirigane in America.
Oh, the Shirigano?
Yes.
Is that what they called it? Yeah.
Yeah. So at that point in the comic, you'd have probably joined all the dots together and you go, okay, right. I can see that the dad probably isn't dead and he was, or he may be dead now, but who knows at this point? Because he's transferring people's brainwaves and things.
Well, I mean, like, even if he's dead, he might, still be around. That's not going to stop him, it seems.
Yes.
So,
at least you'd be that far, based on. And you'd be that far at this point. In fact, maybe even further. But I don't know for sure, because this bit isn't translated.
Okay, I was wondering, was it that, or was it, like, the whole thing of the... Because, obviously, the entire point of the Shirigana is they... It's not that they put brainwaves into each other. It's that they carry on this dude's will and hatred of puppets, but ability to use puppets...
Because what
so
is the...
You're like a copy of a guy anyway. Like a flawed copy, sure, but still.
Because, Dwayne, what is the other thing noticeable about Dean Maestra when we meet him?
He's the weirdo who jumps at the dock and starts nuzzling people.
Yeah, but what about his character design? Who does he remind you of in the character design?
Like a lot of people.
I mean, no, he looks pretty much exactly like the younger Masaru? Of the Alchemist Brothers.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. I was trying to remember which one was which. I don't.
No, I can't remember. I did it earlier today, and I've already forgotten.
The bad one. The baddie. Yeah, okay.
Yes. Then Guy shows up, and he's like, okay, you'll kill him. But no, first of all, I'm going to finish remembering my life.
the kid's like, wait, what? It's like, yeah, you should remember. Look into my memories and see. And the kid just collapses and goes into the flashback. And he's like, right, so we'll just sit here for another 20 minutes and he should be caught up.
The another thing which is missing from this episode is in the comic is that in the comic there's like a briefest glimpse of Masaru's face looking evil. As to suggest that, oh, hang on, the dad has actually...
There was a glimpse of that when he went into the room, wasn't there?
Maybe I missed it then.
Yeah, he caught his own reflection and there was like an evil smiling.
Oh, yeah, that thing. No, but this is actually on his expression and his face.
Oh, not a reflection.
No.
Okay.
And then some of the bits and pieces. But in general, there's nothing really missing that makes it confusing. And like I say, that I'm only mentioning that because I'm not guaranteed they'll explain it, but they may have also figured like, well, we've cast him as every single character. You could probably get the same clues based on that.
Toshio Furukawa has all the female roles.
That's the only way, as I said on Twitter, the only way to make it spoiler-free was to have him voice everybody in it.
I guess it's like because we haven't had those the first characters they kind of voiced in a lot of the more recent episodes and in every episode. So it's the only way, the only continuing character is the voice actor playing this new character, that kind of thing.
Yes, but we know he's Sadayoshi already. So
yeah,
and
yeah,
we've heard him play Sadayoshi in reading the diary bit and on the records.
Yeah.
But he's using a different voice in this. He gets to use his Nozomi Otoko Ataru Moroboshi voice as the young Sadayoshi. So the rest of the flashback, though, is... Well, first of all, Guy explains his... Before we go into the main flashback, Guy goes, hang on, let me explain who I am.
With a flashback.
With a flashback.
Obviously.
Because you won't be able to see this, because I'm not feeding you my blood.
Yeah, you like basically he catches us, the audience, up to the point where it'll make sense where he appears in the flashback. Yeah. Like it's him like talking to the kid, and it's like, oh, and up to this point you'll be able to remember because you have the memories now, and that's what knocks him out. Yeah, and
basically
we cut to a different flashback that continues the story.
Yeah, he got Zonifer and was abandoned by his mother. That's pretty much all you need to know.
He had a fixation on sweets as well.
Yes. Because that's what his mother had left him in lieu of actually caring for him.
Yeah. I mean, like, it was super nasty, but, like, it's basically a terminal disease, right?
Yes. Well, yeah, it's like it puts you into... It doesn't kill you, but it makes you unable to do anything.
Yeah. I mean, like, except for turning into a shirogane, there seems to be no fucking cure, so, yeah.
Then we see him showing up at Kuroga Village and basically turns up to Angelina and say, "Hi, I'm here for your child."
Oh, because she's pregnant.
Yeah. Yes.
Which is unusual for Shirogane as well.
I've been training medicine and surgery. I'm here to cut the soft stone out of you and stick it in your child and take your child back to France.
All right, then let's have a puppet fight. And she's trying to explain, like, what mother would abandon her kid kind of thing to the guy who was specifically abandoned by his mother while they have a puppet fight.
And, yeah, he thinks he's a tough guy. But he's just a kid, and he cannot be a mother trying to protect a child.
Well, also her thing of signing a gear in some of the puppets they made has come in handy twice in this flashback, because the first time is the puppet. What's his big wedding dress puppet called again?
I can't remember.
Olympia.
That's it. Yes.
Yeah, yeah. He does her super move of I'm going to turn my fingers into syringes. My shoulders into fans and stab you and suck all the blood out of you, and then you'll be dead. But like the gear doesn't turn quite enough, so she manages to dodge out of the way while being heavily pregnant, and it sucks all of his blood out. So the pregnant woman takes care of him. Is like, I'm just taking care of you. He's like, yeah, but you know, when I get better, I'm gonna steal your baby. And he's like, we'll see. Very condescending kind of thing.
Meanwhile, in Tokyo. Shoji runs into, hang on, that looks like my wife. What's she doing here? Hang on, that's not my wife. I could hear.
I have to explain Jesus to her. Wait a minute. That sounds like a puppet.
Yes. Yes. And Francine explains that she's come here because she'd found a gear in a puppet and it was signed, and she's come to ask Angelina to destroy her.
Yeah, I need you to dismantle me. What is it? Decommission me or something like that? I can't remember what word she used. Yeah.
And so first of all, before they take her to the village, he adjusts her so she's no longer a puppet death machine.
Yeah, now you have the strength of weaker than a human.
Yes.
So, you know, you can't... Because he did come at her with, like, his cool sword cane and she just grabbed it in the air. You know, it was like, whatever, dude, I'm a super puppet.
And they arrive just in time for... Angelina to give birth, and which they get to they have to explain how humans come into the world to Francine.
She's like, I am incensed by she's like, what? You can just make humans?
Yes.
That's crazy.
This is some bullshit. I had to fucking engineer a whole fucking traveling death circle to do this.
Yeah, and you have like Guy there going like, hey, you're the super puppet we're trying to stop. Oh shit, I'm trying to deliver a baby and give it out to her. It's like, wait, how can you have been around for so long and not know how babies is made?
And they can't get a nurse in, so Guy's going to have to deliver the baby. They cut a lot of the weird slapstick humor from the comic, which surrounds this scene. There's like one vestige of it, which when Guy's like, hang on, this baby's got no arms. Oh no, hang on, the arms are still in there.
Whoa, God, there's blood.
He's only done it in theory. He's never actually delivered Oh, crap, what do they call it? With the baby's reversed.
A breech birth.
That's it, yeah.
And the baby comes out, but it's not crying, and Francine grabs the baby and spanks it to make it cry.
Like instinctively, yes. I guess, to show she's made from a mother, that kind of thing, is my guess.
Yeah.
Because obviously she didn't even know how babies were made up to this point, so how would she know to do that? Unless she was like, shut that baby up, which doesn't make sense because the baby's not crying.
And we get some flashbacks to her traumatic existence as well. Do we get... I feel like we get at some point, it may have been in the last episode, it may also have been this... Do we get the explanation of why Angelina looks like Francine in this episode? Or am I remembering that from the comic?
Yes, no, we do, because like basically when he takes her to the gate of their house, he's like, wow, you look just like me, and your man's like, oh, that is, I thought that was weird too, and it's like, well, see, my mother, that old woman from the fucking thing whose name I keep goddamn Lucille's sister was actually
sent away to another village or something,
sent away to another village, and was actually this puppet was based on her, I guess, and I look a lot like my aunt. So, yeah, that's why she looks like her, isn't it? I think.
Yeah, that is why, yes.
Okay.
They are related, so it's not just a story contrivance. I mean, it probably was a story contrivance.
It is a story contrivance.
He had to figure out how to. But, yeah, it definitely feels at this point that this was the story he wanted to tell, and that's why so much had to be slashed out of the first part of the anime.
The way you told it just there sounds more like you called Fujita Sensei, why do we only have three or four character designs? And then as you went back, pedals through, it gets more complicated and caught in the lime and it's fun. So yeah, they went back in time and they're actually immortals from China and they make puppets that also look like themselves and they're third cousins from the moon.
I was getting more what was it, fucking Spider-Man, the back in the clone fucking saga shit, where their explanation is like, hey, why does that guy look exactly like you? And they're like, our dads were twin brothers. You know, from that TV show, that kind of thing. That was their explanation. It's just like, it's like, yeah, okay, that's barely enough to explain it, but it'll do. Yeah, fine.
Many more episodes of flashbacks to come.
Oh, I fucking imagine so. We've got a lot of history to cover before we catch up to now.
Yes. Okay. Once we've got all of Shoji's flashbacks done, there's other characters' memories have to be delved through.
Are they going to sit down in a room while a bunch of other people sit in the room and wait for a child to come out of a coma where he remembers everything up to the point where a guy interrupts? A guy interrupts.
Yeah, no, I think they're just all sitting threatening to kill him while he remembers things.
Just fucking kill him. Just fucking do it. What the hell? No, he needs to know the extent of his crimes. And even if he has been brainwashed, we're definitely brainwashing him right now.
But there's no translation after, I think, Shoji's memories. So this... But I do know from looking at the roars of the comic that it goes on for quite a while. But I'm fine, because this is actually stuff they're actually adapting pretty well in the anime.
If only they could have fucking adapted the bit that they wanted to skip to get here well. This is good. I'm not denying this episode is good, but just I'm still fucking once bitten, you know?
Yeah.
It sounds like a little bit like it's seesawed so drastically from having barely any functional backstory to just be fucking a sort of fucking avalanche of backstory.
But the all backstory is good. Like, that's the thing. If they put like this kind of all backstory into that other stuff, I probably would have enjoyed it more.
Yeah. A burger is good if well cooked. if you have 20 of them, though, you're going to feel a little sick.
Well, we'll see. I mean, there's definitely some turns and then I think it's kind of action from here on out. And there's probably a whole load of extra stuff they're just going to cut out because, as I say, as I've mentioned before, if you came into this and in your first three episodes, if Shirigane Eleanor was your favorite character, the show was gravely misleading you, particularly once they cut most of her stuff from the circus out.
Well, I mean, like, second favorite character, but yeah, I am kind of a little fucking pissed about that, honestly.
I mean, you won't see much of Narumi either, but...
That, I mean, like, that's the other thing. It's like, favorite character and second favorite character, they're not in this show anymore.
No. Well, the main character is Toshio Furukawa's role, all of them.
Pretty much, yes. Pretty much the main characters, I think,
the main character is ostensibly the kid, but the kid is just experiencing that guy's life. So, yeah, definitely.
Yeah. That's where we get his brainwaves put in there, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think there's definitely an argument that Furukawa and Hayashibara are the two leads in this show.
Like, could they not have just cut the two lads out of it and just went, and the show's not about them?
Well, it is about Masaru. Masaru's going to get a hell of a lot to do once he breaks out of all these flashbacks he's having of other people's lives.
Cannot wait until they pull some kind of move where they have the swapped voice actors have him do each other's parts, but... fucking Hayashibara, this like old stretchy-faced man, just going, hey, it's me. Happy. I'm not put past the narrative at this point to pull something like that.
Oh, yeah.
And sounds bizarre.
As I mentioned before, there's two characters who are pretty main characters who haven't been introduced yet.
Are they going to get cut out?
Needed more cast members.
Yeah. I wonder what their backstory is. I wonder what their fucking, like, mental trauma is that will get injected into this boy.
Killed and or brought back to life in a fucking macabre way by puppets.
Why do you hate puppets? But first, tell me all of your life up to the point where you hate puppets.
A cruel joke of humanity.
I'm also curious. There's like some action coming up, technically, in the next episode. And I just wonder whether it's
just... puppet fight in the last one was all right.
There's a puppet fight in this episode, but...
that's what I mean. Like, it was okay.
Yeah, yeah. And the fire stuff was... Yeah, it's just... But it's automata action.
Mm.
And they've never been very good so far with giving us the automata action that we demanded.
Yeah.
Okay. Somehow we talk the most about a show we're probably enjoying the least. But
it's a car wreck, man. I can't not look away.
And I'm not even watching it. No. I'm still finding a bit of time in.
No, it is literally the thing I'm most excited to watch each week.
I don't know what the fuck's going to happen. That is kind of exciting or interesting, but not exactly fun. Yeah.
Haven't quite as hard to fall to the bottom of the ravine to separate. It's hitting every cliff and ledge on the way down. I can't see which one it lands on next.
Next up, Boogie Pop and Others. Episode 8 versus Imaginator 5.
I keep questioning if I have those numbers right.
Yes. What happened in this episode?
A lot of kung fu fighting, so yeah. I'm okay with that.
Yeah, that was cool.
Like, there was one, and I was like, ah, sweet. And then there was another one, and I was like, what? I didn't know I was going to get another one in the same place.
Fucking poor what's-her-face Konoe is going to be really sore when she wakes up.
She's going to go wake up with a few less teeth by the look of it, yeah.
You got beaten up by two separate, like... badasses.
Kotoe Kinukawa... So you were right, Dwayne. Yeah, he was just going to use some of those guys to kill.
Misaki.
Yeah, no, I thought I picked it up wrong when you said it, because like sometimes the show is very confusing and I allow myself to be confused by it. It's fine. Some of the characters don't know what the fuck's going on. What's his name? Spooky Electric was fucking really like, wait, what's happening right now? By the end of this episode.
You're right. It's a lot of people only having a certain amount of information.
Audience included, like me, anyway.
Even Imaginator. I mean, yeah, was not aware of the Toa organization until this episode.
Yeah, yeah, and he was like, oh, brilliant, that'll come in handy. Oh, wait, I didn't plan for that to happen. Whoops! So they were going to just fucking whack him when they got the chance, really, but he... decided to kung fu ambush them first, I guess. Yeah.
Yes.
You fucking wrecked those dudes.
Like they brought a gun, but they didn't bring that shit to the party. And he takes the gun off them straight away. So no problem.
Before he does the martial arts, and you know, I thought, okay, like how good could like a fella in like early secondary school actually be? Because we always see my dude off screen in Boogie Pop, but. Absolutely fucking doing arm bars on these dudes and messing them right up. These guys have run like twice his size, some of them. How are you doing this? Martial arts.
Cool. And he's swinging the cape around like a pro. And it's just like, yeah, no, this dude could fucking Batman if he wanted. I mean, like, his sister already is Batman.
Yeah, I was going to say. And then what's worse, his big sister shows.
And being like three times as many guys like, come out of the alleyways, and she fucking demolishes all of them as well.
Well, she does have a Batman suit and a stun rod, so she's even more into this than the middle schooler kid.
Look, and Masaki's really into it, though. Maybe a little too into it, because he managed to disarm her when fucking when puts a gun in him, he gets it off, and he has this fucking thing like fun right in the middle of it, get some answers out of you. He's like, I'm not going to talk to you, and he fucking pistol whips her, the bastard.
Yeah, he's going like the vicious Batman thing, but I like the way he's trying to like intimidate the information out of it. It's like, this isn't a person you're talking to right now, but he doesn't know that, obviously.
No.
Because even his sister assumes this is an impersonator, because it's like, fucking everyone knows who I am. I'm a big deal on campus.
Yes. Yeah. And Spooky E in that body is trying to goad him on, because, you know. Go ahead and kill me. What can make a difference to me? But if they're making you a murderer, this is as good as killing you. Because either way, it's going to be discredited.
It's just like, I'm just a copy of the guy who's currently taunting you, so whatever, dude.
Mm.
Is it Suima, the
Suima
criminal psychologist kid, confronts Jin, and she's figured out that not only has his cousin changed personality, he's changed personality, because she doesn't think the person he is now would have ever painted the painting he's got up.
It has a different feeling to it,
And the way that she heard him described to her doesn't kind of match up with what she's who she's talking to right now.
I know there's a lot of like talking and stuff in those scenes, but I really like the framing of it, where he kind of steps out of shadow into the light to be like, yeah, I'm just the guy having a conversation with you, and then he kind of steps back into shadow when he's like, oh, you want to fucking see the real me, kind of thing. Yeah,
and then he explains exactly his plan, and then goes, huh, lol, it was a metaphor.
That was kind of like, what? No. When I said sacrifice a girl, I meant because, you know, as a model for an artist, you got to stand there for a couple of hours. I was like, fuck off, dude. That's not what you meant.
Sacrifice her time and her blood. Oh, is that nothing?
No, by blood, I mean a different thing.
This isn't blood. This is a red paint mixed with blood.
Yeah, like he was being super creepy and then trying to just blow it all off when he couldn't not win her over or anything, but...
That's kind of his arrogance, though, as well. Good. Yeah, I got it all figured out. So I'm just like, you know, I'm literally going to change the world. I was just a fucking guidance counselor like last week. Now I have designed on remaking the very fabric of our society.
I think it's suggesting that was always there in him, especially with how he talks about his cousin and that kind of thing.
Yeah, because his power, he was powerless. All he could do before was see what people were lacking in their hearts and souls.
Yeah.
He couldn't do anything about it. And
now
so
he can change it.
That's what Imaginators tempted him with, was the ability to... And also, I think it's give also that ability is also given Imaginator meaning, because Imaginator didn't have meaning until...
I think he literally mentions the thing where you're kind of taking snips from one plant and...
Yeah, to Spooky at the end.
Yes,
yeah.
But it really breaks down his philosophy really well, like takes it apart, because obviously he's looking at her and her flower hasn't bloomed, and you can see, I can see that you're yearning to feel more complete and that kind of thing. And it's like, wouldn't you like to be more complete? And she's like your friend, and you know, like, she doesn't even like you. She's not your friend. And she's like, no, I want to help her because we're not alike and I want to get to know people. And you can see that this thing that she's missing in her heart is making her a better person, like going out of her way to help a stranger, that kind of thing. So it's really kind of destroying his moral philosophy of like, I'm going to take away you striving to be anything. Because the striving is actually what makes you a good person, or a person in general, I suppose. Yeah.
And I think, Masaki ends up with the key that, Katoe had, which I assume is the key to the amusement park, which, apparently it's called Paisley Park, but I assume they're never saying that in the anime adaptation. and then we get Jin confronting Spooky E, who we learn is responsible for killing his dad because he was testing these drugs on people because the terror organization is observing people and testing people. And he's going to use this disinfectant gas once he's discovered. I assume that's some sort of poison.
Yeah.
Just like burn the whole experiment down, basically, once he's done.
And he never seems
says out loud that you killed my father. It's just that, oh, yeah, I guess you wouldn't care about the people who die in your experiment.
Yeah, and then we get the cut to seeing his dad die in the streets from the allergic reaction to the drug they'd secretly been feeding people. It was earlier on. Who does the Katoe spooky mention would be interested in? Is it Misaki or Kirima? I think it's Misaki, isn't it?
I'm trying to remember now.
As if to say, like, his abilities are, someone's abilities were so high that the terror organization would actually be interested. He's basically, his plan is that he's going to make it snow here, but then work his way up through the terror organization and...
He mentions like, you mentioned that you wanted me because our powers are similar, but that means I could basically take over from you and no one would fucking know the difference.
And also, mine are better than yours, because all you do...
I don't do mind control. Yes. What does he call it? Like plonking some fucking memories in there to make them do a thing. Like, I changed their soul. Your one doesn't account for a soul, that kind of thing.
Yes. Yeah.
It's as well, like, he seems to have pointed out, you guys just fucking trying stuff out and see what happens. You've got no fucking direction or purpose. I've got a grand design, a meaning in me. And I can, like, give this meaning to you. You're lacking.
Yeah, I think he says he wants, he wants to make all humans the same.
Yes. Everyone to think the same so that they won't...
There won't be any social misunderstandings, there won't be any pain and suffering, because everyone's exactly the fucking same.
Interesting. I'll just go to a different date on that actually book and see. Is that what inspired all of those, all of the kind of plot lines? It's a bit like, in the like mid-2000s anime episode. That was always like the grand scheme. It was like in Gundam Seed Destiny, I want to say. Read or Die TV, the same idea. I wonder if you all got a go out of this. Was there something doing the rounds? I mean, I'm walking that way.
Good chance, because this is definitely a boom light novel. So he removes Spooky's aggression at first, and then they'll fix his... He says he'll fix his soul as soon as they get a partner for him. But Spooky is like, well, now you've removed my aggression, I now have the will to commit suicide.
I've always wanted to try this kind of thing. Yeah.
It's kind of weird. Do you hear the helicopter outside? They're coming for me.
Yeah. Oh, fucking watch out, dude.
It's a tow organization.
They know.
We've gotten to the bottom of it. We know too much.
And he discovers Aya and then apologizes that he's not here to save her. He's here to sacrifice her.
Yeah, because he's like, oh, you do remember. Because it's like, this is the guy who saved me before. And it's like, no, he's considerably, like, he was already dangerous then, but he's even more so now.
Yeah, so apparently, like, her soul's perfect in the first place.
Mm.
So that's obviously, somehow that is a failure for the terror organization to create somebody with a perfect soul.
Well, yeah, they were just trying to make, like, monsters without genitals and that kind of thing. They're not aware
of it in the first place. Because, yeah.
And I suppose that's to be contrast, or like her perfect soul is to be in contrast with your man being riled up by her saying like she's like the town bicycle.
Yes.
That kind of way earlier in the episode. Which is obviously what her function is supposed to be, but not who she's being as a person. Yeah. Like Spooky, you're a failure in that you're a good person.
Camille.
Yeah.
Spooky is not a good person.
No, sorry. What I'm saying is that she is a failure.
Yes.
Because I don't think Spooky was considered a failure, was he?
No, he wasn't, no.
Yeah. I mean, like, he was working for him and everything.
He was a useful goon, anyway.
Yeah, pretty much.
He was a success in that sense, but, you know, I think he's probably really overestimating his actual usefulness or fucking...
Yes, because...
His value to the organization.
They mentioned that it was probably being replaced with somebody else.
Like, this isn't like Spooky E versus Imaginator, because it's like it wasn't even a fucking contest.
But so presumably next week, Boogie Pop will actually do something.
Who fucking knows, man? Might just show up as like, oh, the problem was solved without me. Okay, cool.
Yes, because I feel like Boogie Pop also... I mean, she does something... She, like, the Boogie Pop's personality does appear, like, a couple of times to give...
It shows up once this episode, doesn't it?
I think it's, like, two lines to give...
Suima
the... Yeah, Suima and Nudge.
It was kind of good, though, because, like...
Oh, yeah.
Toka is just going, oh, man, I really hate doing maths. It's so boring. And saying, well, no fun. That girl reminds me of that guy who did the weird thing in the room. But it's, oh, maybe you should go through the best. Yes, maybe you should. That'd be a real good idea.
And like,
anyways,
like,
I hate maths.
I love the way that was shot. Yeah, because it's initially her going like, wait, who the fuck is talking to me right now? And she has to look up at her friend with a different face. But then her friend's face reverts back to its normal self midway through the conversation. And I was like, it was nicely framed. It was like, it's really weird. How they do that. It worked quite well.
Righty-ho. Then we've got Bono Bono. Episode 46, Big Sis's Boyfriend. What a healthy relationship this is.
Oh, boy. Oh, I can change him.
No, just get rid of that guy. I hate
him. I know, but the fact that he looks terrified at the end.
I mean, like, he does have to do with Cho. We know what she's capable of. Yeah.
No, I'd be actually sincere about some of the stuff I've been doing lately. Basically, do my own actual, like, romancing of her. Shit.
But the bulk of the episode is, again, him making Chipmunk do things for him in order to woo Cho, but also the addition of making Bono Bono do things for him as well.
Ooh, he's so fucking rude, he hasn't even let him introduce himself.
Yes.
Ooh, I hate that guy.
But then later on, Chipmunk makes Bono Bono do things as well.
Yeah, I mean, like, Bono's probably an easier mark than fucking Chipmunk, which is weird, because Chipmunk will do anything.
Yes. But after they make him not to say anything nasty about Pippo again, so I'm going to have to get Bono to say it instead.
He doesn't have a nasty bone in his body, Chipmunk. How could you do that to him?
Complicit in your schemes. He's just being a fucking Pippo. Gosh. Doing the whole shit like fun. I usually get me this fun beating up. Get it yourself. Yeah, but I gotta give it to your sister. And then she'd be so super happy to get it. And what if I tripped and fell and didn't get the nut, and then your sister didn't get the nut in the end, and she'd be so sad about it? Do you want me to be part of that? Do you want to be responsible for that? Me getting hurt and your sister being sad? Do you want that? We've got a point. It's not a good point, but we've got a point. And now I feel guilty and I gotta go do it.
It's a bad point, Chipmunk. Use your reasoning. No.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, this is Die, isn't it? No, we haven't had him meet Cho yet.
Yes, not Cho.
Sorry. Yeah. Jesus, that'd be a different situation.
That's the promise of a future episode.
Oh, fucking get in there. Yes.
No, Cho wouldn't have any time with a Joker.
Oh, no, she'd kick his ass. That's what
get
I want.
Get the shit out of him. Yeah. Mm.
Like, if Anathan's going to break these two up, it's going to be her. Oh, dear. Even trying to call him out that he was just bragging that he's in a relationship to his friends and prove that you love her and that kind of thing. And the denouement is just that it's like Cho likes a charity case, basically, right? Or sorry, Dai likes a charity case.
Yes. Yeah.
So it's like, you might not approve Chipmunk, but this is my boyfriend and you don't have much right to kind of butt in as much as I know it isn't your fault. Well, she probably knows it isn't fault or doesn't care either, right? But like, no, this is between me and Pippo. Well, that's what's going up. So if we got a problem, we'll sort it out. We don't need any of your help. Even though Chipmunk's going to get fucking roped into it no matter what he does or says anyway, but then that's kind of tragedy of the whole thing.
Yeah, I mean, like, I think, like, after the getting of the nut and stuff and cracking of the nut, I think he should have just went, okay, let's not follow this guy around because it just causes me physical pain. But, you know, he's not a sensible kid.
There's great draw. Chipmunk's mouth throughout this episode is just a great raggedy line of anger.
Anger and anxiety, like a weird combo.
Yeah, it was going to be everything I wanted, because as soon as I saw him in the other episode, I was like, ah, good, he's going to be around for multiple episodes.
Oh, like he's a guy who I love to hate, a good villain, you know?
He hasn't met Raccoon yet. He hasn't met Raccoon yet either, that's the other guy.
Yeah, you're right, there's so many cross-character interactions that have such good, juicy comedy potential.
Yeah, yeah, good stuff. Then, finally, I do believe... yes, finally, Kitaro. Gegege no Kitaro, episode 44, Masquerade Noparabo. It's all about being true to yourself and saying how much you love superheroes.
Just nerd out, man.
Yes, or saying how much you love to eat fans of idols.
Well, preferably not that one. That's a crime.
You do you, buddy.
Like, I didn't see that turn in it, because I figured that part of the story was fairly straight, but, you know, okay.
No, it was almost like watching another episode of Magical Girl RA, in terms of the satire of the entertainment industry.
Right, right.
So, yeah, this is all about a idol who's playing the part of a playboy.
The prince fancy and, one, yeah.
The prince and the playboy in this paradise idol duo. But he accidentally exposes himself on TV as an otaku.
For, like, one specific superhero?
Yeah, is it Go-Go Man?
Yeah. Initially, like, on the flashback thing, I thought that was a thing he'd met up as a kid.
No.
I was like, oh, that's cute. The kid met himself up a superhero persona. I was like, no, this is an actual, it's a huge franchise. It's getting another movie. It's in the Marvel Cinematic Universe now.
I was like, this is like a popular superhero. Like, they're saying, oh, I love Superman. Well, then is that going to be that much of a big deal to the audience? But it's when he goes on about, oh, yeah, this new figure came out and it cost me like a fucking load of money, but I bought it anyway because I'm going,
oh my God, the painting and sculpting on it? Top notch.
That's fine. Damn it, kid, you're supposed to one tip to the script. You've ruined the whole dynamic of the idol group.
It's also the fact of how shocked and worried the guy in the Go-Go Man's costume looks as he freaks out on him.
He's like, dude, no, don't do this.
And yeah, the only person he can talk to is this guy on... what's the fake line?
Rain,
that's it.
Yeah, Go-Go Fan 358 or something.
Yeah. They agree to meet up, but oh no, the person he's going to meet up is a yokai. Noparabo.
Yeah, the thing of him like texting in, like when he was going home and in his house is like, you're literally my only friend. Random person online who also likes Go-Go Man.
Yeah.
It's because he's the only person he can be himself around. And so he's like, I can't go and meet him. Kitaro, will you please go and pretend to be me?
Oh, because we have the other yokai rules where he's not a kid anymore, so he can't see you. And also he'll freak out because if he finds out yokai exist.
Kitaro, so... you've got a face. You can go and meet him for me.
You got a face and can hold an action figure. This should work. Yeah.
And Kitaro's half-hearted faking... being interested. It was pretty
funny. I feel like this is close to the comic version you were telling me about where he just does not give a fuck about anything around.
I love Bat Spider. What? I mean, yes.
And he won't even call himself like Go-Go Guy. He's like, I'll call myself Gege Guy. Yeah, okay, yes. Now I can accept this persona I'm adopting.
Yeah, Go-Go Man Taro was the name.
That was a screen name,
But yeah, so as he's as at sushi, the guy's wandering back, he's like, well, there's a few things seem a bit out of place there, and follows Kitaro back, and then runs into him meeting up with Noparabo, and he's like, fucking hell, a yokai.
Well, it's multiple trail. Not only A, that wasn't the guy who I thought I was friends with, B, the guy who I thought I was friends with would fake me out like that, B, the guy who I thought I was friends with who faked me out like that is a monster that looks like an egg.
Who's gonna eat me?
Would you rather that guy or rather a dude with his face burned off? Because you can be a whole anime if you want, buddy. But this is the one you're in.
I mean, like, as no faces go, this guy seems all right.
But luckily his partner shows up in a car and picks him up
And has a real heart-to-heart where he feels like he can open up to his idol partner guy. He's like, dude, I think I might want to quit the band. He's like, well, if you want to quit the band, I'm going to have to eat you. Sorry.
Because I'm also a yokai. I'm
a creepy
old
man yokai.
I think it might be a creepy old woman yokai.
Really?
I believe so, yes. Yeah.
Oh, okay. I thought it was just in like a high-pitched crazy old man voice, but it was doing high-pitched crazy old woman voice. All right.
Yeah, so it's I liked all the cuts as they're driving away to like the little clues in the back of the car as to what he's actually been up
to. Like
the
more and more stacking up evidence of essentially the pile of corpses.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Except this time it's a bag full of cell phones. It's the final.
Yeah, because initially it looks like, oh, it's presents for like his girlfriend. It's like, oh, a lady's shoe. Raunchy stuff must have been. Oh no, these are the leftovers from victims. Yeah. It does a nice turn on it. Yeah.
Yeah, and while what's the other yokai called? Is the something barba?
Trying to remember what it was.
Oh yeah,
it has kind
the,
of like
the reveal and everything.
Poison
yeah.
powder old lady.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, sure. Baba's in that fucking name. I should have got it as an old lady. Yeah.
It's another thing who normally involves taking people's faces, but that didn't really come into the plot of this one.
Oh really?
Yeah, I think they're paired up in other episodes in other series.
Hmm.
Turns people's faces, or takes people's faces with powder, or turns their faces into powder. The powder stuff gets...
Ouch, there's the powder. How hard does he punch you?
Yeah, he manages to get a message to Noparabu, who runs to help him. Meanwhile, and I like the fact they never spell this out, but... But the punchline of Kitaro, Neko Masemi trying to convince him to get a phone, and then like, oh, but he doesn't need it because he's
great.
Got
yeah.
crows.
There was a crow on the scene of the crime, so that informed him.
The original social media crows.
They're pretty much everywhere.
So
you're never going to have a problem running out of battery or running out of phone credit or anything like that.
Yeah, but it was kind of fun because obviously Nekobatsumi is sitting there like, it's like, wow, what a jerk that guy was, just fucking hanging up on him. But Kitaro, you should get a phone. They're actually pretty good to keep in contact with people. Crow informs him of crime. And then
can you train a phone to flock and attack your enemies? I think not. Can you train
phones
a
bring
phone?
You on a piece of wood to places you need to go?
Can
I don't
carry
fucking
you around.
Think so. Well,
Noparabu shows up. He says a phrase which makes Atsushi realize, oh, it's non-kun from when I was a kid.
Like, he says at-kun or something. Like, something that would be a very obvious nickname for him.
They stand up for each other, but neither of them are tough enough to beat this yokai. So luckily, Kitaro shows up and dispatches it in double quick time.
Yeah, I mean, like he was having a little bit of trouble with its magic hat, but then, you know, Nekobatsumi just chopped his hat up.
Yes.
Give it the thing laser, and you're good to go.
Yeah. He wasn't holding back on this fucker. I mean, like, he did murder a bunch of people, so that's probably okay, yeah.
Yeah. And we get a little bit of a flashback of Noparabu, like, realizing, oh no, he's growing up, he can't see me anymore. He doesn't want to play being superheroes with me.
And that's the reason he got a phone. It's like, well, we can still stay friends. He can still see me on SMS.
Yes.
And on TV, because I got a whole new career.
Yes.
As the nerdy idol guy. Yeah.
He's changed management. It's probably for the best, because that manager looked dangerous.
Like, he was making him beg and shit. That's,
yes.
That was clearly a Yakuza office.
Yeah, probably. I mean, like, one of his guys was, like, a murderer, so I'm guessing he used him for that. The shady motherfucker.
Yeah, his magic could be some kind of, like, mythical ogre. Oni.
Could be at this rate, yeah.
So Nekomasuma was clearly trying to do an exchange diary with Kitaro, but Noparabu shows up, and Kitaro's like, oh, you must have got it for them.
That was really sweet of you, Nekomasuma. What a nice thing to do for your friend, yes. Noparabu.
You're welcome.
That's what I meant to do. I wanted to give him the cute cat notebook, you motherfucker. God damn it. Notice me.
Yes, you, the guy with no face. We go cats, don't we?
I love the final shot of Kitaro's dad chilling out in his bowl with the action figure. sit beside
him. Which is bigger than him.
Yeah.
I guess it's nice for him to be able to sit down with someone sometimes as well.
Yeah, fun episode. There was some nice cartoony character animation, particularly that entire sequence at the start when they're on the TV show. I thought at Sushi's face and mannerisms
were really
good. Pretty cool
too, with like when they're kind of doing the moves on the poison gas lady. Chopped her up good. Well, shot her up good.
Yeah, there was no body left. It was just a soul. Right, we'll try to find the name of that yokai. Who's that yokai? It was...
It's the Ayakashi.
God damn it.
Oshiroi Baba.
Oshiroi Baba. I'm going to ask again. I'd owe Doroi Baba, but I think I was thinking of the monster from last week.
Face Powder Hag is a yokai that makes face powder that can steal faces.
Well, she uses like poison face powder in this one, yeah. So, something like that. I mean, like, your man only accidentally steal crybaby man. Old man crybaby. He only accidentally steals his face by going like, oh shit, I forgot that was my power. Yeah, sorry.
Yes,
dude.
I forgot when I cook human souls in tempura.
Like, were those legally traded human souls and that's why Kitaro doesn't kill his ass? I don't quite understand how that works.
Ethically sourced from prison.
No, these are tofu human souls. You can't tell the difference once they're dipped in batter. It's great. Oh, God. I don't know, man.
Excuse came from, like, an alchemy lab full of lifeless homunculi.
So. No humans were hurt, just homunculi.
They had no life at all to begin with.
Oh, God.
We are gay.
Righty-ho. I think that's everything, isn't it, for this week?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Next week, I'm going to watch, in addition to everything else, Black Clover, episode 71. I say I'm going to watch, I've already watched it. I'm going to try and remember what happened in it, yes.
Right.
Because that's the first main appearance of Mario Leona.
Who's that?
That is my favourite character in Black Clover. She's great.
It seems to be like the way to do One Piece and Black Clover now. Just like, hey, do you like that character? Or there's a sweet fight coming up.
Yeah.
Yeah. The way there was like a big fight in Black Clover a little while ago. Had figured out episode. I only episode. I saw the gifts, but I got the general idea. Been reading the comic as well, so I'm kind of...
Okay.
Yeah, I was going to say, unfortunately, I think from this point on, there's pretty much only sweet fights coming up. So the question is whether those sweet fights all translate into...
Right,
because it's well, you'll get to next week, but yeah, it's the onsen arc is the thing they're doing at the moment, which is like a parody, but also incredibly nude in the comic. But I suspect it won't be in the cartoon.
Tastefully censored, like bears and stuff getting in the way.
Yeah, I assume it will be a lot more misty.
Oh, yeah, of course.
In the anime.
A lot more people that deep in water as they need to be.
Or
yeah.
They will have brought their swimsuits. But we'll get into that next week. They just go there this next week's episode. Then it's like they do the... Oh, yeah, they do... Because they do like the Royal Knights competition. They like pair people, or put people into teams of three wizards and they have a tournament. So you get loads of action in that.
Try with the tournament.
Literally, I was thinking as well, yeah.
Yeah, pretty much. And then I think it pretty much goes into whatever the massive arc they're calling the current arc is, which is just non-stop fighting with elves.
That's a good name for an arc? Yeah, okay.
Okay, cool. I kind of am looking forward to more speed fights. While I have been enjoying the gimmick of the card right now, it's like I have a very elaborate method of using smoke or diamonds to make magical things. He just comes along with the sword from Berserk and just smashes it. It's like I have a grand scheme in mind. My mana is at sky high levels. You know, swonk, smashes them in. Like, doesn't even cut them up. It's just like you cut the magic thing in half, but it's like kind of break their arms.
We oh, so it functions up. Like one of those swords would in real life. It's like, yeah, not really a cutting edge. It's just the sheer weight of it.
It just fucks the guy up.
Yeah, okay.
He's got a fun little smoke getaway car to get the fuck out of there. It's like, oh, shit. he's going to kill me. I got to get out of here.
Okay.
The anime related thing I did was go watch Battle Angel Alita, or Alita Battle Angel. But
how was?
Well, you can find out by listening to this week's Dynamite in the Brain.
Oh my gosh. Half the press.
Pluggity plug plug. We should be out the same day this is. So you can find out what I thought and what Anthony thought and what John thought. We managed to get 75% of the people who watched Ghost in the Shell. I will say, spoiler alert, it's better than Ghost in the Shell was.
That's a low bar.
I'm getting.
A long chalk, I would say. But
So it's not just hopping over a low bar. It actually managed to do something. Yeah. That's good.
It seems like genuinely, genuinely kind of faithful production of it.
Yeah, I mean, like a lot of the early stuff put people off, but like it's because it was trying to be maybe more faithful than people expected.
Yeah, yeah. I will say. Yeah, the thought which did go through my mind when I was in the cinema, though, was, wow, I'm getting the Karakuri Circus effect with a Hollywood budget.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, you're going to see a lot of...
You're going to see a lot of compression. Mm.
Yes. Rightio, we'll be back next week with the final orders from the boss. Otherwise, you can find... other podcasts at secretofthesailormadness.com and dynamiteinthebrain.com. Goodbye.
Bye. Ciao.